Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, which means I'm Ken Napsa.
And it means I'm Joseph Scrimshaw. It's nice to have my identity confirmed every week by announcing my own name on a podcast. This is our News and Cues episode, Ken. We're going to talk some news, and then the Cues stands not for the character Q from Star Trek, although we will be talking about him later, but it stands for questions.
That's a good tease, sir. Oh, yeah. We're going to be branching over to Star Trek, the war that began and never ended. It ended when I left the playgrounds. But yes, a lot of fun, a lot of news, a lot of cues. We love doing these episodes and getting into those headlines. We love those headlines. It's been quieter, but we got some good ones today. Before we get to all that, we want to remind you today's today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/forcecenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. But that's not all with the offers, Joseph.
No, we have another ongoing offer. Inside Editions, publisher of a ton of great Star Wars books, they are offering 35% off. Yes, 35% off across their website with a special Force Center code. To get your discount, you can enter the code FC35, or you can visit the website with this link, insighteditions.com/discount/FC35. And this week, we are continuing to recommend a book that'll be coming out soon on May 4th, Star Wars Day, and that is Star Wars : Galactic Baking. We've got to see a couple of preview pages from this in it. It's got a bunch of fun recipes that look like actually tasty and like sort of a art sculpture. It's like crafting you can eat. You can eat Mustafarian molten lava cakes, Cloud City marshmallows, Lothcat kibble, Keshian spice bread. That's the one I'm most interested in. Dagobah bog pie. That one I'm intrigued by as well. Anyway, you can check it out with the code FC35.
This might be the book that makes me conquer my fear of baking, not cooking. I love cooking more than I ever did before, thanks to the lockdown. But baking might be that area of fear I must face. So this might be the book to help.
It is scary baking. I've had some scary baking adventures, but that's a story for another day, Ken.
Another day indeed, but a story for right now is our Star Wars adventures. Man, we're just transitioning like pros today, and I love doing that. Joseph, we love catching up. Life adventures, Star Wars adventures. I always can tell by your Instagram feed if you had an adventurous weekend or not, and I think you had one. I think you and Sarah had a great weekend, but I don't want to answer for you.
No, I did. I did. We had an adventurous Saturday. My wife wisely said, I know that you want to just stay home and watch television and work on Saturday, but what if we left the house? Wouldn't that be amazing? And we are, of course, lucky to live in Los Angeles, where there are lots of great, beautiful things to see, including the ocean. We live in the actual neighborhood of Hollywood. So it takes about an hour to drive out to the ocean, pretty much for us, a pretty straight shot to the Santa Monica Pier, which people know from, you know, people flying by that in, you know, movies like Iron Man. Yeah. If you're like, where'd he go? Well, watch the beginning of the film Iron Man, and you'll see him fly by. It's such a weird and surreal experience. It's one of the things I love about Los Angeles. Los Angeles, the whole general, you know, metro area holds so many fun contradictions, and the road down there, just, you know, Santa Monica Boulevard, you know, the end of Route 66, especially toward that second half, you've been on the road for a while. There are a lot of lights. There's always a lot of traffic, and it's just like, I'm grinding through traffic. Oh, yeah. There's the ocean. You're like, can I just keep driving and just go right into it? Not in an end it all way, in a commune with the ocean way. But it's just so beautiful. You grind through an hour of traffic, and then suddenly it's just, you know, we hit it at about 4 o'clock, and the sun was low and sparkling on the ocean, and just absolutely beautiful, absolutely gorgeous. So that was nice, just to reconnect to nature, take that step back. And then we looped around through some great weird Hollywood, not Hollywood, you know, Los Angeles Hills, and went to a Target. I bought a retro action figure of Merman from Masters of the Universe, which seemed appropriate since I was looking at the ocean. But to get to the Star Wars part of it, Ken, yeah, we've been trading Target visiting stories, and the toys, the Star Wars toys, are just decimated. There were literally no action figures. There were a few Grogu's. There are a couple of those little sort of mini micro machines that come with the little figures with the weird proportions. Those are not personally for me. The only thing, like, on the actual wall, it was just all the empty pegs, and the only thing hanging from the pegs was the Mando and Child walkie-talkie set, which was just incredibly sad. Imagining Din picking that up and going, Grogu, are you out there?
Wow, that's great. I might want one of those. We have a long hallway in our house. I can give Grace one at the end.
Yeah, no, I mean, the walkie-talkie is probably not necessary in my apartment, but yeah, you've got that long hallway and you got a couple little side rooms. You can definitely keep in touch with one another. So that was my adventure. Got to look at the ocean. Hey. And then an empty toy aisle.
Look, I think the Earth is a beautiful, wonderful place. Hope we get to keep it a little bit longer. But I got to tell you, Southern California, yes, it's I grew up on the coast. grew up in SoCal too, and been on it for 23 years. I don't stand for it when it's disparaged in terms of its beauty. Yes, it's a city. Yes, it's taken over. Yes, there was a lot of smog, especially in the 70s, and there still is now. It's a beautiful spot, and there's just some beautiful areas. And you got to experience a lot of, including you said you drove up the hills, the canyons, Topanga Canyon and all that area. Just some great stuff. So glad you got to get out and do that.
Yeah, it is really just amazing the amount of, you know, particularly this week, we're on the deep dive. We're going to talk about kind of if we could really do a star tours of the galaxy, which planets would we go to? And like, I had that on my mind because like, okay, I saw the ocean and now we're, you know, winding around Topanga Canyon, which there's some parts of it that look very like this is a forest. And then it's suddenly like, no, this is a giant chasm. Now we are surrounded by on all sides by rocks and like big, you know, big rock walls. Looking at sort of when we were in Santa Monica, looking at Malibu from a distance, it was really the hazy, misty, like purple hills that just made you feel like the Zillow Beast is going to rise over those.
Well, there's a place in the North Valley, north of the 118 freeway, for those keeping score at home, Porter Ranch area, and it's got some cliffs. Essentially, there's some neighbors up there that we've built in the hills so much. So you go up there and you can set up there and you feel like Obi-Wan and Luke overlooking Mos Eisley from that cliff. You feel it and it looks like it. So I know what you mean. It just kind of, you can see the world as Star Wars sometimes.
Yeah. Which is, it's just a beautiful, fun bit of both escapism and realism at the same time. So that was my adventure. No Star Wars action figures, but Merman will have to do. I will have to pretend that he is a giant fish guy and have him play with my Star Wars characters.
Love that. I was going to report nothing. I was going to come to you with nothing. I was like so busy, different things. And, you know, I know you had a busy week too, which is why Sarah was so smart to be like, put the work down. We got to step outside a little bit. And that's something we all do every now and then and need to remind ourselves, no matter what field of work you're in. But I had one of the weeks of head down, grind until morning. But last minute, last night I was getting ready, doing some prep for this episode and other episodes we're doing. And, you know, out on YouTube and, you know, sometimes YouTube, you click on something and you got videos recommended that you just don't want to see or the random channels. Oh, those algorithms. And sometimes you get to remind YouTube, I don't want to see that angry person in the car. Thank you. But all of a sudden was a clip from a documentary. I don't even know what it was from. My bad. I didn't look it up to give it full credit, but it is an interview with Lauren Peterson. And Lauren Peterson is one of the underrated ILM founding father types.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, he's in the Empire of Dreams and he's got kind of the bushy white beard and the ponytail, gray, white hair. And he's a character indeed, but real calm and quiet type of character, just a different kind of guy. And it's like a 20-minute interview and there's some other people in it to be clear, but he's kind of the star of the little interview. And he tells this great story of, you know, joining the team and he and his partner, John, not Dykstra, but the other guy he worked with, I forget his name now. They kind of bluffed their way into a high paying job with Lucasfilm, like higher paying. How they discovered that helped other, because now Lucas and Lucasfilm had to like pay the other people more because they were working underneath them. But also how he's like, we were broke. We were poor. We had nothing. And we were like, yeah, this is our rate. This is our shop rate. And they're like, oh, okay, well, we have to pay them. So I thought that was fascinating how they all chased a dream with almost nothing in their pockets back then. I'm fascinated by that time. I'm fascinated by any really creative. Does anyone look around and go, wow, we're making history while we're making it, right? Comedy Store in the 70s, SNL in the 70s as well, Sunset Strip in the 80s, whatever. I just, as a pop culture fan, I'm obsessed with that kind of stuff. And Lucasfilm, ILM specifically, in Van Nuys, not too far from a golf course. He used to play it all the time in that warehouse. And what was interesting about this, Joseph, is Lauren Peterson is the guy that introduced super glue to ILM. Showed up. Yeah.
What were they using before? Like double stick tape or?
Essentially some tape and some epoxy, you know, something that sticks, and they'd have to put it on and put the tape over it, let it seal and dry for like 10 minutes. All right. Not a long time, but he shows up with this thing that, you know, I think there was a Japanese company would use this. He says, look, man, you got to give this a go. And he literally tells the story of super gluing a pencil on a table at like a 2-degree angle. And the whole ILM staff, I mean, this is Murin, this is Johnston, this is Tippett, everyone going, oh my God, what did you do? And how that sped up production on Star Wars. Because they really give us that.
That is amazing, right? I mean, that sounds like some sort of myth. Like, you remember, you gotta really just watch out for yourself. Tell people what you're worth. Just, you know, get yourself into that factory. Show people how glue works. Just make your own life.
Yeah. Yeah. Find your worth and also use super glue. I love it. I got it. And I was just, you know, I was digging too. I always want to make sure I 100% confirm some of this, but Lorne Peterson, I don't know if you've heard this, Joseph. I love learning new things about Star Wars, a movie you've seen all your life. He is the rebel guard that is in that tower on Yavin doing the like weird radar gun check.
Oh yeah. Yeah. The ship tracking. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's him. According to sources there. So I also love that too. So Lorne Peterson, an unsung, I should say, hero of the ILM days.
Yeah. Oh, it looks like he won the Academy Award for the visual effects on Temple of Doom. So,
yes,
glue and removing hearts he introduced into our world.
I love that. So, anyways, that was my Star Wars adventure. I didn't expect to have one, and the last minute, I had a great one. So,
That's great. That's great. You've had a great focus on being sure to look behind the scenes, and I think that is a huge part of being a Star Wars fan is getting to know all of these various cool people, both from back in the day and from now, who are making it happen.
Making our dreams come true, literally building our childhoods back in the day. It's crazy.
Glue my childhood back together, Lorne Peterson.
So with that, we're going to transition to the news quite well, because speaking of our childhoods and all the things we loved then that we love talking about now, Kathleen Kennedy's had her hand in a few of those things. Just a few, you'd say. Just a few. Look at that resume. It goes for miles and miles like a CVS receipt. And as of right now, Kathleen Kennedy not going anywhere. This, according to Bob Chapek speaking at ChapekCon, a.k.a. addressing the Investors Day with Disney, a good old conference call. The ones that Joseph coined the phrase, IgerCon. I will admit, ChapekCon, Joseph, not as intriguing, as sexy as a headline as IgerCon to me.
No, I think it's a Bob party now. Who knows? I think we're going to change it to BobCon. But now we don't, Iger's kind of in the mix. Chapek's, you know, it's a confusing Bob's time for the convention name.
I think Bob party's I like that one. That one worked for me. So this is where they're able to take calls from investors, and I sometimes wonder how screened they are, but this one, I gotta tell you, I don't know. So there were some questions that got through that didn't seem to be screened, but one of them was, now imagine, this is Bob Chapek, along with Iger, top dogs at Disney. Someone gets on the call and says, hey, what about those rumors that Dave Filoni's going to take over Kathleen Kennedy's job? Fair question, I guess, but it's surreal to me, Joseph, right? Just that question alone got asked.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that, I won't pontificate on how, but it does definitely seem like there is a blend of what used to, I think, feel to us of internet conversation that is making its way to the boardroom level.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. So he was asked, and Chapek said, we're absolutely thrilled that we can have the creative talent in our company, the likes of Kathleen Kennedy. We look forward to having Kathleen directing Lucasfilm activities for years to come. So let's just deal with that statement, those words. Joseph, what do you think about Bob of the Bobs talking about Kathleen Kennedy here?
I'm thrilled that there's a confirmation announcement. I mean, I suppose that there is some elbow room in that. That could mean that she's going to step up to some, like, you know, a consulting producer or whatever. So maybe there's some wiggle room for what that really technically means. But the spirit of it that I think is we're thrilled with Kathleen Kennedy's leadership, and she is going to be involved in some way for a long time. And personally, I'm thrilled for that, because I kind of feel like that we are entering into They don't use this terminology for Disney Lucasfilm, but it feels like Disney Lucasfilm is moving into phase two, right? The sequel trilogy was completed, tried the standalone films, the Star Wars stories. You know, there's some kinks to work out there, but then also the launch of Disney Plus. And now we're moving into really this new world of like, well, what does Disney Plus open up now that it's successful, largely, not largely, at least partially, largely thanks to Mandalorian.
Yeah.
What does that open up for Star Wars? And we're in this real new place with the films of, we're not pre-announcing a trilogy with a bunch of set directors. It looks like we're going to invite different directors in to come and play and see where it goes. So it's really entering this new dawn, to quote the title of a Star Wars book. And it, I'm really happy to have somebody who has already been there, already gone through, here's what we learned, here's what really worked well in phase one, here's where there were stumbles, here's how we can launch into the future. It makes sense to me to continue that leadership.
Absolutely does. This is you want someone to continue kind of the mission here, and I agree with you. Shapik's statement, prepared or not, or on the fly, it's corporate speak to a way, and you can always find wiggle room in that, of course. And if you want to dive into that, you know, it's okay to. But I think that's a pretty strong statement, and it's a pretty clear statement. And he wouldn't say that if he legally didn't believe to me. That's just me. But I'm really happy there. And you're right. This is kind of phase two. And I think it's so easy to look across the office, so to speak, at MCU and see where they are now in this wonderful spot. They've done so well, and Feige and his baseball cap deserve all of the credit, and the myriad people that have helped make that happen. The actors, the writers, the behind the scenes people, everything. And not for nothing, the comic books.
I think they helped a little bit.
Helped a little bit. But I always go back to the beginning, to getting off the ground, Feige trying to get people to understand the concept, and Iron Man being even a weird choice to maybe launch this at first. That's the guy they're starting them with. And Robert Downey Jr.'s got all those kind of things.
Huge risk at the time.
Huge risk, right? Is it quite like Keaton in 89? Maybe, in a way, it's maybe even more important because of what they were trying to launch. So they got it. We're going to talk about some of the actual individual things, accomplishments or mistakes or anything you want to talk about, but they got it off the ground, something with immense, immense pressure on it. She shouldered that and often maybe shielded others during that process. And it was a success in many, many ways, as you said, largely, hugely, smallly, large, whatever you want to say. Now we'll really get to see. And now we'll really get to see what when they all roll up their sleeves, what they can do going forward. And I think the High Republic, even though it's mostly at this point all on the publishing side, is a great start and a great example of what we can look forward to coming down the pipeline in Star Wars. So that's why, to summarize, I'm happy she's still at the helm.
Yeah, completely agree.
Yeah, now, so let's take out the hot takes on Kennedy out of the picture, and the bad takes, and the sexist takes, and any other takes you want to take them out. Take out the takes. Her retiring, I think, or moving on her own accord, is and always was and will be possible, right? That's just a reality of it. And if she was ever like, hey, it's time for me to move on, or time for me to move up, I think that's okay. How do you feel about that idea, Joseph, of wanting someone, or do you feel at any point you want someone to have this kind of story leadership, this Filoni Favreau job everyone wants them to have, which would be probably very intriguing, but how do you feel about that idea at this point in time?
I feel like I would be happy if that announcement came, if it was the right person at the right time. You know, I think that there is, with something as big as Star Wars, just from my own small amount of producing, you know, theater, and my small amount of being involved in the industry here in Hollywood, I feel like there is sometimes a misunderstanding of the need to have somebody who understands absolutely every element at the top, from creative to financial to marketing, you know. And I think that's what makes Kathleen Kennedy such a strong you know, in successful producer is that she really understands all of it. The creative aspect is a part of her job, but a part of her job is just keeping track of absolutely everything. So if there was somebody who wanted that job, that was, that split it off a little bit more, and it was a little bit more like, I am going to be the key creative person, and that made sense to everyone involved, fine. But it's also like not, you know, it's not a job that I feel like is missing. You know, everything that we've seen, not only the story group, but you know, like you look at the art of books, and there's these quotes from, you know, everyone involved. Like Kathleen Kennedy is having artistic opinions. Dave Filoni, you know, is kind of the reigning Padawan, become master of the Lucas perspective, is having opinions. You know, Doug Chang is having, you know, opinions. So I think Kathleen Kennedy, in her position, has done a really great job of being like the producer, taking care of all of the decisions, both the practical, and, you know, having a voice in the creative, not the least of which is, you know, picking directors who have a vision. But she's really, I think, compiled this team of trying to bring in new voices and trying to really respect the legacy of Star Wars by having other people at the table. I think the narrative of they have no idea what they're doing creatively, I don't entirely agree with that.
Yeah.
And I think it's Kathleen Kennedy who has sort of, to me, protected the soul of Star Wars. I'm veering off a little bit from your question. I'm sorry. Just feeling passionate about what I think Kathleen Kennedy has done well. But yeah, I think to answer your question, creative head, if it makes sense, great. But I don't think it's this thing that's desperately, desperately needed. And I realize many, many fans and listeners might disagree with me. And that's, of course, just fine. But I just don't see it.
Yeah, it's so valid to bring up because I'm with you on that idea of like, it's not necessarily a job that's needed. It's not necessarily something that's missing. I 100% agree with that statement. Can't add anything more insightful to that. I've always agreed that. And I don't think, as far as running Lucasfilm, Filoni himself, I'd love to find clips of him going, what? No, God, me? No, that's not what I do. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing for me too is, I don't know why I'm a David Lynch quote machine lately, but he has this quote of focus on the donut, not the hole.
Yeah.
And he often means, I think what he means by that is his films are, you know, weird, but pay attention to what's on the screen, not what you think is just to the left of the screen.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's kind of what's going on sometimes with Filoni is he is, you know, I think every compliment he gets from fans is deserved. I think he does an amazing job. But if we focus on the donut, not the hole, he is clearly, by his actions and words, focused on this is great to move into live action and to learn everything about that. And I'm having a ton of fun working on The Mandalorian. And now I'm going to be, you know, in charge, it sounds like, of every tiny bit of the Ahsoka show. Mm-hmm. It seems like Filoni is, if we listen to his words and actions, on track doing what he wants to do, creating great Star Wars.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And this narrative of no plan, all those things, we've fought against that on this show before, probably enough, and I don't want to turn that into that and to turn it into some kind of battle lines drawn as it did. And Kathleen Kennedy became such a focal point of that because she's at the top and she's out in front. She's at the conferences and the conventions and the calls and in the promo videos. And yeah, so I get it. And I think that's part of her job is to be part of the public face. But, and again, as I said, shield a little bit, you know, I don't think some of the horrible things said about her, some of the thoughts are deserved, but she might have the thought of, you know, sling those arrows at me. I'd rather have them at me than others. And then, you know, the landscape has been harsh the last couple of years anyways, but I don't think she's been lost in that. You know, I don't think she's worried.
I think she's doing okay. I mean, I think sometimes that we can all get distracted by the fact that, you know, Star Wars opinions run red hot. Right.
Yeah.
And you can see like, oh, well, you know what? Some directors got replaced and all these kind of things and say, oh, it's, you know, this is the return of Star Wars has been a mess. Like, well, you know, Disney's coffers disagree with that, you know, these movies have made a huge amount of money. Mandalorian helped launch Disney Plus extremely successfully. That was a risk, and one that really creatively and financially paid off. And I think sometimes it's just because we as fans have strong opinions about Star Wars and disagree about which films are good. You know, that happened before.
Yeah, indeed. What do we feel? And again, I always say this, we're not in those meetings. We're not in the conference rooms. We're not in the hallways. We're not on set. We never lose sight of that here at Force Center, I think, even though we have fun with some speculation and occasionally might have fun with some of the gossip. Sure, I'm not going to say I'm not a a person that enjoys a good story every now and then, but what do we feel are some of Kathleen's best decisions?
Yeah, I feel like she, to me, has really tried to embrace this key legacy of Star Wars that I think both I've heard her speak about it. I've heard Favreau and Filoni speak about it in reference specifically to The Mandalorian. I have heard us go on and on about it on this podcast of Star Wars is this mix of new and old, both on screen in its themes and behind the scenes of it is a collection of looking back at what has been and celebrating the sort of the ancient and the sacred, and also bringing in the strange and the bold and the new. And I think, you know, that's a thing that's really different between Star Wars and the MCU. MCU had years of comic books to start with, but Feige built something new that nobody even knew what it was from the ground. Kathleen Kennedy came into something that has legacy at its core, but also absolutely values exploring the new. And I think that she swung for the fences and brought in a bunch of different directors. Some of them worked out great. Some of them, there were some bumps. And I think everyone involved just really tried to find that balance, that incredibly important balance to Star Wars between the new and the old. And I think for me, you know, some of this is, you know, as you say, we'll never be able to have been in the room. Some of it is reading tea leaves. But I think that Kathleen Kennedy has protected the soul of Star Wars. I think that she has made every effort to bring in, you know, new ideas and new people. And that's, you know, increasing with Disney Plus, right, in every way. You know, more diversity, all sorts of great ideas of new. But if we are to believe the reports, and that's a big if, I love Lord and Miller, huge fan of all of their other work. The Into the Spider-Verse is amazing. The Lego movies are amazing. I have no problem with Lord and Miller. But if the reports are true that they wanted to take Solo into more of a comedy, you know, kind of standalone comedy film, and Kennedy's coming in and going, that's not, we got to have that balance of respecting what has been, and that's not the script that the Kasdans wrote, you know? Great. You know, people can really have all their opinions about the Duel of the Fates episode 9 script, but to me, some of the ideas, particularly at the end, Rey giving into her rage, that's not the Star Wars that Lucas created.
Yeah.
So for me, my opinion, big underlined opinion, because I don't know the facts, and everybody has a right to their own opinion, I think that she's really tried to bring in new ideas, new talents in those moments where they tip over into, but that's really going to go against what this, not only what this team of people who've been here a long time think is, that's not quite right for Star Wars.
Yeah. Yeah. I still consider those her best decisions, the changes, not on a comment on the talent that was let go or separated from Lucasfilm or what would have been better, what could have been better, what was better. I just really respect that at this level, this eye, with all the world watching, all the film world, all the fandom world watching, all Star Wars fans watching, she wasn't afraid to make those decisions that she felt was best for Star Wars. I really do believe that. And I still think one of the, you want to talk about best decisions, was Force Awakens. Just doing it. And just making it happen in 2012, 2013, different time, different era. And some of those names that were brought in were, you know, Trank comes to mind, where their value was a little bit different at the time and things went awry. Just to make those decisions and to stand up there and say, right or wrong to you, this is right for us and right for me and right for Star Wars, because you all love Star Wars. We're trying to get to that goal. There's always going to be what ifs. You and I will always have some donut holes that we want to look at before enjoying the full donut. But that's, I actually think, the best. Just Force Awakens, launching it and getting there and making decisions that she feels in her heart are right for the company.
Yeah. Final thing for me is I think it's in The Director and the Jedi when she has that quote, that documentary about Last Jedi, where she's talking about really going back to A New Hope and going, yeah, what made this special? And stripping away a lot of different things. It's like this meant everything to George Lucas as a human. George Lucas as a human is in this film. And I want to find directors who put something of themselves in the films. What I hear from that as a creator is Kathleen Kennedy is somebody who knows the bottom line, it knows the marketing, knows the budgets, knows all the producing, but really sees, understands, cares about art and storytelling.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel in the spirit of fairness, I'll ask this question, answer it the way you feel best, Joseph. Do we feel there have any been, quote, bad decisions that we know of publicly? We're again, not there in the hallway when you run into her on a Monday morning. All right. We don't know that stuff. Do you feel, is there anything you can point to? Maybe it's not a decision, a feeling, a vibe, anything like that.
Yeah. I mean, this is like a not knowing what, you know, what exact concrete decisions. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, mm-hmm. I don't disagree with, obviously it, you know, is not the greatest PR to have as many director stumbles as there have been, you know, mm-hmm. between, you know, the Gareth Edwards thing, which seemed pretty smooth overall. Mm-hmm. You know, making the big changes on Lord and Miller in episode 9 director. Like, I think those were the right artistic decisions in my opinion. Yeah. But of course, yeah, of course I can. Anybody who says to me, yeah, that's not great for PR. No disagreement there. You know, but that's, I think, where I come down on this view of like, look, the whole team swung for the fences, tried to bring in a lot of different perspectives, and sometimes they were great and sometimes there were bumps. But what was important at the end of the day was the art and the storytelling, you know, and putting art above everything else. Like, I guess I think I am doing some philosophical flips of your question here of was it a bad decision? Yeah, but it worked out good. Like, I can't, of course the Solo, you know, not making as much money. Iger has taken personal responsibility for the release date. But, you know, nobody watches Casablanca and discusses its release strategy. You know, you watch the film and it's the art that survives, not the box office, not the release strategy. And I think, you know, Solo is going to be a film for the ages because of the really tough decisions that were made.
And no one talks about the script for Casablanca being written as they shot it, not knowing the ending.
Exactly.
Yeah. I can't point to one thing or that you could look at the Solo stuff, not just in terms of the director's release date, everything, but I call myself a Bob Iger fan. I'll stand by that, but he's publicly said, you know, here's some things, mistakes I made with that film, and some mistakes with George, as he said in his book, The Ride of a Lifetime. And I think you can't, that's the, you know, sometimes you can only go as far as, the person at the top lets you go, you know, and some will say that about Kathleen Kennedy, but I think Kathleen Kennedy could probably say about that about Iger. So I don't lay a lot of that on the feet of her at all. I do, you know, she's so out in the public, but I think she also doesn't want us to get in the way. And I respect that a lot, but I don't know, maybe if there's more of every once in a while, that some of the controversies, do we need to hear from her? No. Do we deserve to hear from Kathleen Kennedy? No, but going to the idea of getting out in front of some things or getting out in front of the news as best they can. Not that they're super cared about, super worried about scoops and everything as much as we might want to believe, but having that, I think they have more of a plan. I think they have more of an idea. I do think she protected the soul, and I wouldn't mind that just being communicated a little bit more. But again, am I laying that on her feet? No. Also, as I said, I think it has a lot to do with her going, yes, it shouldn't be about me. It's about Star Wars and the story. So I think it's a weird combination of things. And that's why I'll never point to individual decisions. You make them if they're wrong and you correct them. I'm more worried. I'm more excited, I should say, about the correction and that you believed in it, whether or not even I agreed with it. So that's what I'll say about that. That's best.
Yeah. Yeah. And certainly everyone involved in The Mandalorian has given her certainly plenty of credit for this. Was it worked, but brand new technology, very limited story to start with, you know, not as epic normally and as sometimes people expect from Star Wars. And she took all those risks and let those creators and encouraged those creators to take those risks.
Yep. And look, whether or not you feel George sends her a Christmas card anymore or not, I think she knows George, understands George. And by the way, George picked her, you know, and I think she understands the big budget tent pole franchise marketing machine and the story. And I think we're pretty blessed.
Yes. Yes. And if social media existed in its current form, when the prequels came out, many people would have wanted George Lucas fired from Lucasfilm.
Gary Kurtz should run Star Wars.
Yes. I will once again, I know I've already said it, but I will caveat it again. I know these particular issues that we're talking about are ones that can be hot button for lots of fans, and lots of fans have lots of different opinions. I'm passionate about my opinion as well, but I am aware that they are my opinion in any discussion of this kind of producer stuff is relying somewhat on rumors and assumptions because we don't know. Yep. We just don't know a lot of this stuff.
Correct. 100%. That should be, we should just have that read as a VO before this episode. The following includes episode. All right. Moving on to something we, once again, facts with a little bit of spicy rumors. But we're going to hear, we're going to put down some fire on those spicy rumors as best we can. The Mandalorian tie-in books have been canceled. DK Books and Del Rey announced via Twitter that they are no longer publishing the Mandalorian Ultimate Visual Guide, which was going to be, kind of always written by Pablo Hidalgo, and Adam Christopher's penned original Mandalorian novel is kaput. So both companies use this wording, Joseph, due to the ever-expanding world of the Mandalorian ellipses, and they went into their statement. So, all right, I'm going to start the bidding here, Joseph. I get it. There are some alluring conspiracy theories out there. They leapt off the internet, citing the drama around the character of Cara Dune as a reason, or the reason. That doesn't track for me. I don't know about you, Joseph, but the character exists, and the name will probably exist in some way. Toys and the likeness, and that's a little different contractual thing, and whatever you want to say about that. Not even going down that path, but I just don't see it as reason. Entire books being canceled, Joseph, right?
No, I personally think Cara Dune, the character of Cara Dune, has absolutely zero to do with this. I will withhold my other thoughts until you ask.
Well, I won't. I'll capitalize that zero. Yeah. But the idea, Joseph, about this ever-expanding world really does make sense. Especially because I've even said, I can't wait for that visual guide. I guess they're going to do 5 of them. So that absolutely makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is such a weird news day, Ken. Mm-hmm. It's basically Kathleen Kennedy is staying and these books aren't coming out. I feel so bad anytime I say I'm happy that Star Wars content isn't coming out. But
right.
Frankly, I'm thrilled. This is great. And I will add many caveats to that as well. But just for me, big picture, this feels like, yeah, it's maybe because all these different stories, all these different shows are being added. The world is being developed. But the headline for me that is screaming out is Favreau and Filoni and maybe other creators involved. They just want room to discover. They want to, adapt their ideas. If they get a big new idea about what Din's backstory is or what, you know, how the whistling birds work, they want to be able to adapt to that without being hemmed in by books. That's absolutely what I'm hearing. I think this announcement to me is a triumph of Lucasfilm putting storytelling over profit. That, hey, look, Mandalorian is super popular. And look, we could have immediately made fistfuls off of The Child at the time, but we didn't want to spoil it. So we waited. This is another of those things like that to me where I think Favreau is really coming out of like, look, I don't want to have it be that this little detail was mentioned and now fans are upset because it said it in a book, you know. I want to be able to just change, just go like, wait, no, I thought I was going left, but I'm going right. And I think the fact that the general machinery of Lucasfilm says, cool, we want to give you that creative freedom more than we immediately need book sales.
Yeah, I mean, look, they could have released Baby Grogu's Big Day Out, the Golden Book, and made a lot of money, and they still will.
I have a Golden Book of Mando in The Child, and it's great, but it waited until it came out, you know?
Yeah, due to the ever-expanding world of Mandalorian. Look, Favreau said, and it wasn't like they were making it up on the set. These books were being put together probably while season one and was being shot or season two was being prepared, all those kind of things. It wasn't like Favreau woke up one day and said, can we get Mark Hamill in here? But his comments were like, that wasn't necessarily where I was going and that wasn't necessarily part of the plan, but it just felt that's where, while writing, where the story took me. So absolutely. We always hear, you know, a lot of the books and comics, but particularly the novels, are tied back to the movie in which they are released around. Because they have to be. And then you see when things look, you know, how many people were like, well, I went to Last Jedi and Holdo didn't speak like Luna Lovegood. And I'm confused because I read Princess of Alderaan. Yeah, that's an example. And Rian Johnson comes out and says, yeah, we shot it. We shot some scenes with her doing a little different take on the character. It didn't work for us. And at that point, the publishing people are like, all right, Claudia, here's the character.
Right. And then we have the fun headcanon of like, well, she changed as she got older, you know, She spoke differently. But yeah, that's a perfect example. You know, we just went through this with the description of events of season 7 of the Clone Wars are at the beginning of the Ahsoka novel. And it's not just the lightsaber color. The story doesn't quite match up, which, you know, I'm fine with. But why would you want to kind of create those things? And I think it goes more to the spirit. I think the big thing to me, I'm going to go back to 800 different David Lynch quotes. This for me is a watch the donut, not the hole. Mm-hmm. Look at the way Favreau in particular tells the story of The Mandalorian. He loves original trilogy Star Wars that does tip of the iceberg storytelling and leaves you room to dream. The show doles out information exactly when it wants to, exactly how it wants to. It is not an exposition machine. It has no interest in telling the audience how something works unless it is emotionally relevant to the characters. Up to a point, you know, Din is still a man of mystery. We know some things about him, but not all. And an entire, you know, 300 to 400 page novel inside his head really cuts into that feeling of mystery and wonder that we only know, oh, he was in these core. Oh, he was maybe here for this event. We don't know exactly when he hooked up with the armor. No, I don't mean hooked up that way, but maybe because we don't know.
We don't know.
Man of mystery. And, you know, maybe the novel would have been different. Maybe it would have been written as, you know, like the Thrawn novels are, where we never go into his head, but it's still a bunch of time. And, you know, fleshing out his time with the other mercenaries, maybe. We don't know what the book is. But 300 to 400 pages cuts into mystery. And I wonder if it is not just the, we're going to change things. We don't want to worry about having little facts that disagree because fans rightfully, you know, feel, you know, sometimes perturbed by that. But it's just the spirit of the thing. I think that Favreau wants... and here's my second Lynch quote, room to dream, you know? And I think that goes to the visual dictionary too, because Pablo Hidalgo does a great job having cheeky fun, filling in details. Then they end up on Wikipedia and then we all repeat them and they're canon and we get really like, yes, we know exactly. Think about the number of things that we don't know how they work, right? We don't know how tracking fob works. You know, we don't know where new rockets come for Boba's jetpack, you know, after they've already been fired. And then there's just a new one. Is it, you know, where'd they come from? Especially, you know, on Tatooine, right? When Cobb Vanth had it. We don't know what exactly the Night of a Thousand Tears is. And, you know, we honestly... and I know some fans disagree with me about this, but we honestly don't know when that is. We don't know character stuff. Is the armor a well-intentioned leader who is just trying to do the best by Din? Or is she like a dangerous zealot? You know, is she going to be the big bad? There's a ton of stuff, both big and small, we don't know. And my perception is that's a part of the fun and the spirit. I think Favreau is trying to go back to the playgrounds and the bars that we used to talk about when we didn't know what the Clone Wars were. We knew from the back of an action figure or trading card that maybe Kenobi and Vader had a duel on a lava planet, but we don't know anything else than that. And we get to dream and debate and talk. And I feel like Favreau likes that vibe. And I feel like not having these books out there protects that vibe.
Yeah, well said. And David Lynch agrees with you. Well said indeed. And look, I am a canon junkie in part of my brain. I don't want anyone to think differently. I want to know some specific stuff, and hopefully Favreau gets to answer it. And I love Hidalgo coming in and going, I know you have a question about gravity and bombs. Here's my little answer, cheeky as you say. I definitely want. I can't wait for this stuff. And Adam Christopher is going to be working on another project. They already got one going on with that. But yeah, I think it comes back, keeps coming back to that. And we can make our jokes. I don't want the show to completely counteract anything in a novel. I really don't want that. And it's fun to try to track to see where it goes. But just sometimes you mentioned the Clone Wars thing. I mean, that was just clear as day. Filoni's like, yeah, that didn't work for me anymore. I had a chance to retell the story. I'm going to reanalyze what I was going to say and how I wanted to say. And Ahsoka's lightsaber colors now mean something a little different to me. So he did that. And I can't imagine Favreau looking at having anyone go, well, so this novel just came out. He's going to be like, this is the guy that's like 3PO and Empire saying Achuta's getting told Achuta's like a deep cut to him. You know? I got something else. Even Cobb Vanth. Look, I love Cobb Vanth. But look what we I don't want to say dealt with like it was a bad thing. It was a fun conversation to have of the differences between Aftermath Cobb Vanth and Show Cobb Vanth. They were there and they're different.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, this last season of Clone Wars and this last season of Mandalorian have demonstrated, hey, we really want to have this connected world. We want the thrill of somebody like Cobb Vanth showing up on screen. But we also want to say screen storytelling needs elbow room, and we're not going to be super beholden to books. And I think the other thing that makes me okay about this is I love that they announced and Adam Christopher is working on a new book. Cause that's the thing where I'd feel like, hey, an artist, a creator, a writer spent time. I'm sure that his Mandalorian book is great. I'm so glad that they announced like we're doing right by this author. He is working on something else, you know?
Yeah.
That makes me really happy.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was looking forward to the visual dictionary. I was looking forward to, I don't mean to poke fun at Pablo Hidalgo. I think he does a great job. Pablo Hidalgo wanted to explain to me how tracking fobs work, I would enjoy that because I can be a canon junkie exactly the same. Mm-hmm. All I'm saying is I can really see the flip side of we've really got to this super canon junkie world view of Star Wars where if you don't know something, it comes out, you know. I'm still annoyed because I don't know the name of the bunny creature that is at the Sabacc game with Han and Lando and Solo, you know? But I feel like this is an opportunity to go like, hey, a lot of part of Star Wars, we get the canon junkie thing. We get to disappear in the world and know every little detail. Mm. Hey, but remember, even if you weren't alive, here's another way to look at it. We're traveling to a bizarre, mysterious world, and there's a ton of stuff we just don't know. And remember, that can be fun, too.
Yeah. 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 I'm saying yeah, because I think this story is a collection of all of our thoughts for the last 5 years or so, Star Wars, in one story. And I can't wait till we get some Mandalorian tie-in stuff. Can't wait. Can't wait. But we are going to have to wait. It's a lesson. It's a force lesson, Joseph.
Yes. Patience.
Patience. Patience indeed. All right. Final story of the day. Fans have built a life-sized Razor Crest. Oh, look at this. Oh, this is a great shot, too. Russian Star Wars fans have built the 13-foot-tall, one-ton weighing ship in the Siberian city of Yakutsk. Now, I'm Russian. I want everyone to know I am actually Russian. My grandmother's from Kiev. my Nella grandfather's Circassian from the White Hills of Russia. So I should be saying these names better. But my dad was raised in America in the 50s. So Russian heritage was not allowed to flourish in our house out of a little PTSD. I apologize. It took 3 months to build and cost 750,000 rubles or roughly 10,200 American dollars. Ail Fedorov, 28, was the leader of the team of cosplayers that built it. He used his savings, sold his car, and then crowdsourced the rest. Holy moly. I'll round this up here. He was, quote, shocked to see the Razor Crest destroyed in season 2 when they felt they're inside the TV show rebuilding it. Joseph, general thoughts on this. What would you sell your car to build? And there you go.
Did that quote, yeah, used his savings, then sold his car, then asked ordinary Russians and companies to pitch in. Was the actual quote from the article. Like, ordinary? Are we saying Fedorov is not ordinary? I think he's awesome. I think this is just so cool. And the article was saying, like, you know, people are coming to see it. You know, this is just such a great picture of fandom. Of, you know, you take your fandom of something and make it into, you know, a project and build community around it. And it's so cool. And the devotion of, like, I am going to make this happen to the point of selling my car is so cool. And I feel his pain about the destruction of the Razor Crest. I have said, you know, I went all in and I, you know, bought that Hasbro Razor Crest. And at the time when I put that order in for that, I thought, like, I am, you know, buying something that's going to symbolize the ongoing adventures of my friends, Mando and Grogu. And, like, nope. No, they're separated and the ship's gone. Anyway, not a reason not to celebrate it, but it's just, it's different, right? Now it is in memoriam, the Razor Crest.
In memoriam. Now this is a kind of a perfect story to end this news saga here, because without a doubt, I mean, I think you and I always try to be respectful or dance around big issues. There's a lot of rumors and this and the discourse and all the kind of things and all the sort of the negative sides. And with a book and canons and what the blah, 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 blah. Look what you got here. You got fans inspired by something they love going to great lengths. I would imagine a car in cold Siberia would be important. Going to great lengths to just take their passion and put it out there in the world and celebrate this thing we love. This Razor Crest is detail on the inside. It looks like you could sit in it. Looks like you could press some buttons. I just want this to tour the world, and I just want 5 minutes to sit in it. That's all I want. That's all I want. I love that. I love that.
I'm so with you. It looks like you could just climb in there and just imagine, you know, imagine, you know, you're trying to fly it straight and not Frog Lady out of her seat.
Exactly. So good way to end the story. But I got to ask the question here, Joseph. I don't know. I don't have any skills in this. I tried to hang a new Game of Thrones art piece yesterday, and that was an hour of my life I'll never get back, nor my thumb. But I got to ask you, man, what Star Wars vehicle or set could be an answer do you want in your backyard?
Yeah, if I had the skills and the time and a backyard, I would build the Unetti Tree Library from Octo. You know, I think that would be really cool to feel like it's a little fort. And, you know, I would put some Star Wars books in there.
Yes.
That these are the sacred Star Wars texts. And then I'd go reread Bloodline sitting inside a big fake tree.
I love that. It's like those sheds you can get by, those portable sheds in your backyard that have, like, you can put a couch or a PS5 in and everything. Yeah, that's what I want. Where's Joseph? He's out in his tree reading his book.
What would you build, Ken?
I keep going back to Bright Tree Village. I mentioned that too many times, so I'm going to try to force myself out of just apparently me wanting to have a fire pit and an Ewok hut nearby. Having been on some of those Falcons, including Galaxy's Edge, including the one with the wonderful folks in the 501st Belgium division, they brought that one to Star Wars Celebration Chicago. It's fantastic. That kind of stuff's fantastic. But I think, go with me here. I'm cheating on my own question here, Joseph. I would want, like, if I was able to get like a 5-bedroom house, I would turn the 5th bedroom into the Death Star conference room.
Oh, wow.
Why? I don't know. It just seems like a good place to sit and have meetings.
Would you use it as a command center, or would you just go in there and drink your coffee out of those cups?
I go in there and drink my coffee out of the cups for sure. And you know, I take business meetings there, stream, whatever I need to do, but I definitely would want the doors like, I'd want that so I could just stroll in every time in a cape, invite, you know, friends over. I don't know why, you know, again, it's very dark side, very menacing. I don't know, but it's so sleek. It's so, as someone, I don't like meetings, but I do love a good conference table and a good comfy chair. So I just think if you got to have meetings, this is where I'd have it.
It'd be a good podcasting desk too for a big podcast.
Yeah. So there you go. All I have to do is sell my car, crowdfund this, and get the skills to build it. So it'll be a ways away. All right. That is a look at news. I got to tell you, I kind of thought, oh, we don't have a ton of stories today, but we had some big ones. There's a first hour of the show. We're going to take a quick break here in a second, get to your questions. But before we do that, we have a Force Center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. Joseph, what do we have today?
That is right, because we do love the books and everything that they add to the Star Wars galaxy. We are excited to recommend this one because we are going to be doing a review in a couple weeks. It is the final book in the Alphabet Squadron series, Victory's Price by Alexander Freed.
Absolutely. Diving into that one. So dive in with us. Download your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audio book. Get an audio book and help support the show in the process. Your questions coming up right here on Force Center.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, Four Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, Four Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138. Welcome back to Four Center. We looked at the news. Now it's time to look at those cues. Joseph, what do we have?
Yeah, we always get two from Twitter and two from our patrons on Patreon. So we're going to start with Twitter with Rodney Webster. Rodney says, will Disney ever be bold enough to cast an actor to portray Luke Skywalker pre- or post-original trilogy without CGI effects? Love the show. Thank you, Rodney, for the kind words and the question. This is a really interesting one to talk about, of how and where and when Luke Skywalker might appear and if a different actor could portray him without the CGI effects that we saw in The Mandalorian. Ken, where do you go with this?
I think they will. I actually think they will. And quite frankly, I think they might have been more apt to do it if some of the Solo kerfuffle hadn't happened. No secret, I absolutely love Alden Ehrenreich as Solo, and I think that's just the way to go. I understand it could be different. I remember the first time they showed the picture of the casting of the young Ned Stark, season 6 of Game of Thrones. I went, no, that's not. And then the actor just got it. Just got it. You get a good actor to take on the part, that's going to drift away. And I was already kind of a young adult at the time, but young Indiana Jones Chronicles, I never questioned Sean Patrick Flannery is Indy. You know, I was like, oh yeah, that, okay. River Phoenix is Indy. It's part of it. And if you want to hear more of these and see more of these stories of the characters, I think it's there. So I think to Rodney's question, will they be bold enough? It would be bold. It would be a big leap. But yes, I think they will. In a couple of years from now, I don't know, but I think they absolutely will. I think there's so much to explore in mind with that character, not just the wonderful performances by Mark Hamill throughout existence. And as long as he wants and is willing to voice or play the character or stand on set for them to put digital de-aging on him, I'm all for it and want more of that. But eventually someday, yeah, I'd love to see that. And I think they will.
Yeah. I think it's a great question. I think for me, I think any choice made with Luke Skywalker is bold at this point. For myself, I think it was, you know, bold to put him in Mandalorian. It was bold to do the CGI because that generated a lot of discussion. I think, you know, the character is so pivotal to the Skywalker saga, to Star Wars, to fans, that almost anything you do with him is bold. I think if there were going to be some more storytelling with Luke soon, to me, it makes more sense to do an animated thing with Mark Hamill voicing if he's willing and interested. I think maybe that would be the least bold because it is the most straightforward. Mm. I do think there's so much interesting storytelling, whether it is him journeying around, discovering more about the Force, you know, the adventures of middle-aged Luke Skywalker and young Ben Solo. The fact that in those Rise of Kylo Ren comics, we learned that, no, Luke got, some competent Jedi running around the galaxy doing Jedi things, it seems like, from the characters we meet. So there's that possibility. So I think there's a ton of great storytelling possibilities. So I would think an animated thing, if it was going to be sooner, and Hamill was willing or interested. But then you could also have another voice actor if Hamill wasn't willing or interested. And then I really agree with you, Ken, of I think it makes sense to wait a few years. Of I wouldn't be surprised to see like this first round that got announced at the Disney Investor Day of Disney Plus shows get a couple new movies out there and get into this sort of next phase and really see that Star Wars can be so many different things in so many different time periods. And then while Luke Skywalker will always be special, I think we'll avoid some of that concern of we're always going back to these characters and it will just be Luke Skywalker will always be super, super big deal, special, important. But I think it will feel less like it will avoid that criticism of, oh, we just have to go back and play the hits, you know?
Yeah.
It's 5-10 years from now, cast a young actor, maybe unknown, maybe Sebastian Stan. I don't have a strong opinion on that one myself. Then it will feel like not something we need to do, but something we want to do.
Yeah, and that's the key. When you want to find a good story and want to tell it, and for better or worse, I know strong opinions about Solo, but you know the Kasdans, even before the sale, they had Lawrence had this story, and he's a guy who understands Han very much. You can debate the execution of that movie, I guess, all you want, but I think they had a good why to tell the story. When they have a why to tell the story of Luke, I'm all for it. I'm all for it.
Yeah, that's a great point to bring it back to the why. I think sometimes I get distracted by the it's Luke Skywalker and I want to see him. That's why. But you're totally right. They absolutely need the right story and the right time to tell it and the right creative team to tell it. And then I think to answer Ronnie's question, I think they will absolutely be willing to recast down the line is my guess. Let's move on to the next question. Brendan Bozarth. Brendan says, if Darth Vader in his prime were to somehow learn of Kylo Ren, whether it be through a vision or time travel or anything, how do you think Vader would react to seeing someone idolizing him so much? What if he also knew it was his grandson? This is great. Some a different approach on not Vader versus Kylo Ren in a fight, really, but what are Vader's feelings on the existence of a Kylo Ren? Where do you go with this, Ken?
The key to this question, great question, Brendan, is Vader in his prime, right? Like, and I guess what is that? Pre-New Hope? Because, you know, once the Death Star blows up and there's the Force is strong with this one, Vader's on a downward slide, according to Vader, right? In the Emperor. Like, Anakin would tell you different. But, you know, that period of time, Rebels, Star Wars Rebels, but stuff's always going on in his mind. Stuff is always working. The war between Anakin and Vader goes on and on and on and on. But Vader in his prime, I think, would not care too much, but it would find a way to use it to his advantage. I don't think there'd be let me tell you something, here's what I went wrong conversation with Ben Solo or Kylo Ren, particularly it's Kylo Ren, obviously. If he knew it was his grandson, then that's when even more he would fear the connections. He would fear the family, but then want to see how he can manipulate Kylo into working with him to get more power, to fight this fight that he thinks is right. And I think it would be dark. I think his reasonings would be nefarious.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm in agreement. I think those are the steps of Vader processing. I think if, you know, Vader is at the height of his power and his throes of being trapped by the dark side, there's been such good development of Vader throughout the comics that I think are really building on what's on screen. This idea that he wants to be the ultimate power. That's what the dark side is. It's this trap where you want more power, then you fear losing the power you have, and you just keep grabbing. So I think that if Vader didn't know Kylo was his grandson and just saw Kylo as he appears, I think he would see him as just a sad pretender to be immediately squashed. You're a sad cosplayer of me and I will destroy you. I think if he realized Kylo's power and possibly the grandson connection, I think the instinct would be similar to what his instinct is with Luke. At first, it's this instinct of I can use that power to destroy Palpatine. Mm-hmm. You know, and get even more power for myself. So I think he would have an instinct if not first instinct, crush, second instinct, manipulate and use. And I think possibly there'd be this interesting what if story to be told here of, obviously, we know the story of eventually Luke getting through to Vader through seeing his mercy. We've had a lot of great discussions about that. It's a different experience for Vader to see someone who is of his blood, right, who has gone through the same fall that he has, you know, would seeing Ben's tortured soul be this mirror to Vader in a way that Luke wasn't, because Luke hadn't, you know, actually fallen to the dark side. Would you know, Kylo be able to kind of hold up a mirror to Vader? I think that's the other possibility, that he would possibly create a crack in Vader's power and let Anakin come through.
Yeah, he has those moments, right? That's, I mentioned the Rebel stuff. I really do think Ahsoka got to him for a beat, you know, in their fight at the end of season two. I think there's those things. That's why it's a constant war to me. So I think you bring up a good point of, could there be? I don't know. It depends on how strong Vader is holding on to his anger at these moments. But yeah, that's an interesting thought too. Of instead of going, hey, well, I'm Ben, I'm your grandson, you could change. It's going, hey, I'm Kylo, you're right. Team up.
It's great to be in constant misery and anger and pain. You know, it's just, you know, when you're making a mistake and then you see somebody else make the same mistake and you kind of know you're making a mistake, but then when you see it from outside of yourself, you're like, is that what I look like? Yeah. I think there's a possibility of an emotional, is that what I look like? From Vader, Anakin to Kylo Ben. That is a great question. I'm really hoping for some more what if storytelling in Star Wars to explore fun things like that. Move on to some questions from our patrons on Patreon. First one comes from Andrew McNabb. Andrew says, giving you guys what you have been subtly, not so subtly, asking for a while now, do you think a Q is in Q from Star Trek type character would work in Star Wars? Quick sidebar to the question. We call this the News and Cues episodes, and every once in a while, particularly when Andrew sent this question in, we kept referencing the character Q from Star Trek. So that is where this is coming from. Back to Andrew's question. Do you think the omnipotent nature of such a character would devalue some of the stakes in our Star Wars stories, knowing that this character could simply appear out of nowhere and remove vile villains such as Mibar Gascon from the story with the click of a finger? Or do you think, used correctly, it could add another intriguing layer of fantasy and mythology to the universe, especially if it was Force-related? Despite space wizards and monsters, Star Wars still has a leg grounded in reality. How far would you like to see that reality go? Ken, where do you go with this? Do you have strong feelings about the character Q in Star Trek, and if that kind of character works in Star Wars?
Well, I want to start here, a little open forum conversation. You're a Star Trek fan as well, without a doubt. You know, Doctor Who may be higher on the depth chart for you. But I've said before, like, I not a huge Star Trek fan, but I do really appreciate it and do watch a lot of things, and Q's been a character I always like. I just think maybe I like John Delancey's performance of him, and I like Q. Never got too much far into it. You've expressed, correct me if I'm wrong, but just like that Q can be not a problem, but like, yeah, he is maybe too powerful. What's your thoughts on Q? I'm going to start there. I should have just asked that question.
I think he works really, really well in Star Trek, because Star Trek is this strange mix, and it's always has been since the original series, of that it has this great respect for science. In you know, there can be a vision of Star Trek of, like, if humanity really gets itself together and goes out and has a sense of exploration and working together, this is a possible view of our real future. Everything happens because of actual science, tachyons. But then also, like, Abe Lincoln's head in space, and a planet that, hey, a book fell, so now we're all gangsters because it was a gangster book. Like, Star Trek has always had some bonkers stuff in it. So Q is a character that makes sense to me because it's a little bit of that bonkers side of Star Trek. You know, it's that balance of Star Trek has such love of science, and there's a world where, like, well, someday humans will understand the science behind Q, but it's an alien that we can't quite comprehend yet. So from our perspective, he's a god, this mischievous trickster, you know? Mm-hmm. So he makes sense to me kind of aesthetically, but then also thematically. How Q works is he's a trickster who tests the characters, you know? starting from Encounter at Farpoint, he's like, prove to me that humans are worthwhile. And in all of his various appearances, that's how he functions story-wise. He pushes the characters to make them prove that they are who they say they are, that they are, that humanity is worthwhile. And that idea, I think, has real value in Star Wars.
Yeah, and I even went as far as to kind of just look up a little bit of Q and some of his descriptions and looking just on Wikipedia, just as he's initially presented as a cosmic force judging humanity, like you mentioned here in a bit, Joseph, to see, but also that he morphs into one of a teacher to Picard and the human race generally, and that being kind of maybe the why of the character, which is something that excites me. So, yeah, other than, I always thought John Delancey was a real interesting performer there. I think absolutely that could work with Star Wars. And I don't know if we have a one-to-one comparison right now, but even something like the Bendu, which I can't fully understand, can't fully explain, is interesting in what it does. Mortis comes to mind, I think, naturally. There's some godlike kind of creatures. Even Yoda and the lessons with what we believe might be the wills themselves or the Force. Some of the stuff George was saying about my sequel trilogy would have gone to a microbiotic level. Like, what? I can think of it. Again, it all serves to that the purpose of I like the idea of challenging the characters, constantly asking them to look at their choices or the choices they're going to make. I think that could work. But Andrew's right. There's always a foot in realism. And I sometimes have my dukes up when some of that stuff pops up. Some of the stuff, like I get to the Bendu I love in the start, but it might have been simply the name. that Jedi Bendu, everyone in the room who already knows this, okay. I think that pulled me in. Same with the Wills or something like that, because I've explained how I just was obsessed with thinking the Journal of the Wills was a book that I needed to find out there in the real world when I was 7 or 8, and I kept asking my mom to take me to bookstores to look for it. So if it's just some kind of godlike character, I think it could work, and I trust them to handle it well.
Yeah, I mean, the Bendu, also voiced by Tom Baker, speaking of my great Doctor Who love. Yeah, I mean, I think that's the way I was looking at it, is like there's tone things. Like, John Delancey is so funny, but he's really played as the, like, I'm going to show up and just kind of razz you, often with pop culture references, you know? Mm-hmm. One of his later appearances is on Deep Space Nine, and a human's been traveling with him, and it's an early Deep Space Nine episode where Q's just like, come on, still travel with me. Like, there's a lot of very human things about Q, even right. though he's a god, and I think some of that tonal stuff maybe doesn't match up with Star Wars. But the powerful, unknowable being who understands reality on almost a different level. Yeah, that's the Mortis gods, right? That's Bendu. That's the Force priestesses that Qui-Gon and Yoda study with. That great Clone Wars arc with Yoda meeting them with the different masks of emotions. They are they can be guides and challengers in this sort of like godlike figures. So I think that makes sense to me in Star Wars. And then the trickster part, that's kind of Yoda's initial appearance, right? Like, I'm going to pretend to be something I'm not to push you to see who you really are. Mm-hmm. I think the Vergence caves, you know, the Force caves are like that. They're these kind somewhat sentient places that show you what you're really wrestling with. Mm-hmm. I'd love to see that idea explored even more, you know, encountering maybe not like a trickster god like Q, but, you know, it'd be a great Jedi story if they land on some planet where it's, you know, an alien race that's only relationship to the Force is mind tricks, you know. And just you can't trust reality at all, you know, because that's a, you know, what some of Q's powerful stories are of, like, I'm gonna actually change reality, and you tell me if this is the reality you want, you know.
Good tool. So, yes, I think, yes, Q in Star Wars. Just bring Q over. It's a connected unit.
Just have him pop in and have a conversation with the Bendu. It will be great. That's a great question, Andrew, and thank you for letting us turn this into Star Trek Center for just a moment. Federation Center. There we go.
There you go.
Here we go to our final question from Kyle Barrett. Kyle says, one of my favorite little details in A Test of Courage is that Master Douglas keeps sweets in the pockets of his Jedi robes. It got me thinking, what items do you think other Jedi from across the timeline keep hidden in their pockets, whether it be foodstuffs, knickknacks to fidget with, or private personal possessions? Mm. What do you got, Ken? Who are the Jedis, and what do they have in their pockets?
What is it? Because Kyle's citing the High Republic era, which so many different Jedi and so many different styles, so many different approaches. But I'm going to a little of the older Jedi, a little of the quirkier Jedi. And, you know, I put Qui-Gon, Obi-Wan in the desert, Yoda. And I think food and, you know, tater tots, anything like that could work. But I try to connect it a little bit of myself. I've gotten better at this, but my wallet was a little bit of a Costanza wallet and can get like that, where I routinely have to go through it and just pull out folded post-it notes where I left myself a very important note that I totally forgot I put in there. The coffee, punch cards, all those kind of things. I see it as being Qui-Gon or Obi-Wan pulling out is like a, just a wad of like actual paper with notes. Like, someone would be like, well, you have like a space iPad. Like, no, I got it here. I got it here somewhere. Where was it? I just think that kind of thing. I think most of the Jedi maybe have that going on in their robe pockets.
Yeah, no, I really like that. I think that at different points, not always, at certain points in his career, I think Obi-Wan maybe has a flask. Maybe that's something I just want to believe.
That's true.
Going to High Republic, we talked a lot about in a review, Reeth Sylas. From Into the Dark, and I feel like he's got to have some sort of like data pad so he can always be studying, right? Like he you know, if it was a real person, it would be like his book, you know, he's got his book on his person at all times. We just had a great discussion about the Clone Wars episode Lightsaber Lost with the Elder Jedi Tara Sanube. I think he probably has hard candies like Master Douglas. Yes. But I also wonder, if there is any sort of Star Wars version of, you know, does he have like fold out pictures of every Jedi he's ever trained, every kid of like, you know, back when they were younglings, you know, just incredibly long string of actual printed photos. My last one, which is fun to guess on, is I wonder if Rey is just going around being a Jedi with her awesome yellow lightsaber. If she sees a piece of like a little piece of machinery that she knows is valuable, that she just enjoys picking it up
and
putting it in her belt.
Yeah. Just collecting the joys of the world. I could see that. That's right.
That's right. Any others for you?
No. You know, I'm trying to think of what Mace might just have nothing but like repressed rage in there. I don't know. Just a list of all the things he knows he's right about, but no one will listen to him about.
No, I think this is maybe one of those fun conversation that goes around where, you know, like Jedi would say, you know, like, yeah, we know we're not supposed to be clinging to possessions, and but some of us carry around little mementos we like, and we can let go of them if need be, in a fun group conversation about what little memento do you carry. And, you know, a different Kit Fisto laughingly says, I have this little token, and it comes to Mace and he's just like, I carry nothing.
Yeah.
That's what I think it is. Mace carries attitude. Those are our questions. Thank you, Rodney, Brendan, Andrew, and Kyle. All great questions.
Yes, great questions indeed. And we are wrapping up our episode, but we want to let you know where you can find us and submit more questions when we ask for it. We usually have that pinned tweet on the top of the page. You can go to Twitter at Force Center Pod. We are on Instagram and YouTube as well. Our Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. Podcasts available on Anchor, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Amazon Music. Also, finally, after a little bit of a technical error, we are discoverable on Anchor, which is our home site. But if you want to like favorite the podcast, if you listen on Anchor, I know a lot of you listen to other spots. Go forth and find us on Anchor. You can finally search and find our name there. Also easier to share the podcast. Merch is available at tpublic.com/user/forcecenter, and we can be supported directly at patreon.com/forcecenter. Always enjoy having new patrons come on board and hop into our Discord community to continue the conversation. You can follow me at KedKnapsuck or go to KedKnapsuck.com. And for my highlight of charities we're focusing on here, we each always present our own. And right now I'm still working with StBaldrick's.org on their upcoming event. They every day all time, all year, are trying to conquer childhood cancer, but they've got a big shave event. It's the big event where people raise money and awareness by for childhood cancer research by shaving their heads. And friend of the show, friend of mine from the Feeding the Monster podcast feed, Jeffrey Saunders, who works in this field. He's been he's got a big part of it, and he's his team Shaving Lives 2021 has got their big event coming up at the end of this week. So all that said, go to stbaldrick's.org to find out more information. Joseph.
Yeah, it sounds like a great event, great charity. You can find me Twitter and Instagram at Joseph Scrimshaw. You can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for links to all my other comedy adventures. In particular, I want to highlight, if you're also fans of the MCU, on my podcast, Obsessed, my wife and I did a discussion of WandaVision, so you can check that out. There's a link to Obsessed. And also the Adult Swim show, the weird comedy fantasy show that I write for Tigtone. Both seasons of that show that currently exist are now streaming on HBO Max. So if you want to check it out and you've got a subscription to HBO Max, you watch 4 hours of Justice League and then say, I want even more. You can go watch Tigtone. And for the thing that I'd like to highlight, I want to continue to highlight the service ResistBot. It is just a very, very fast, very convenient messaging service to reach your reps and let them know what you think they are doing well, what you want them to focus on. I think it is a great little reminder that we do have power, they do represent us, and we can try to reach out and tell them, here's what is important to us.
Absolutely. Reach, hashtag reach your reps. That's a good marketing campaign there. Good stuff. As always, thank you all for listening to another episode of Force Center. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
The softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.